91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today we welcome legendary record man and broadcaster Michael Dean. He'll preview his Listening Club presentation coming up on Lincoln Road next week about WBUS, Miami Beach's alternative radio station of the early 1970s. Renowned actor, producer, and writer Sam Elliott talks with our film critic Dan Hudak about his latest film, I'll See You in My Dreams, and his long cinematic career. Chef Norman Van Aken and Jody Horn-Leschinski's Broward Arts Calendar wrap up the show. Please stay with us to catch the conversation and information coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the program today, film critic Dan Hudak talks with actor, producer, and writer Sam Elliott about his new film, I'll See You in My Dreams, and his long cinematic career. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and our arts calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski, assistant director of the Broward Cultural Division. Hitting the airwaves in 1958, Miami Beach radio station WMBM-FM began a long and varied life. In 1961, its call letters were changed to WMVJ, Miami's Voice of Jazz. That incarnation survived until about 1965, when the call letters were changed to WGOS, Wild Goose Country, until 1969, when the call letters were switched back to WBUS, Business Radio. A year later, the station featured a format change from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., undertaking South Florida's first freeform, essentially rock and blues-based music, interview, and news format. It became known as the Magic Bus. Located at 814 First Street on Miami Beach, the Magic Bus gave the South Florida airwaves an eclectic, broad-based musical and information alternative to Top 40, Soul, and News Radio. With us today is one of the Magic Bus's former producers and hosts, Michael Dean, who added his own unique presentation to the freeform signal at 93.9 on the FM dial. His program was called A Show You Can Shake Hands With in the Dark. Mr. Dean will give a presentation this coming Wednesday, June 3rd, called 70s Alternative Radio on Miami Beach, The Magic Bus, as part of the Listening Club's schedule of events at the Art Center, South Florida, 924 Lincoln Road, Miami Beach. The event is free and open to the public. Mr. Dean's presentation will be streamed worldwide live next Wednesday at 8 p.m. at spectacularsystem.com. And let's go back to 1972. Right about now.
Hi, lovers and sports fans. This is Jerry Rubin, and I'm here with Richard Nixon, and the two of us are listening to WBUS Radio FM in Miami
Beach,
the best station in town, the most political station in town that plays much more music.
And music, much more music they did. With us today is Michael Dean. Great to have you with us on South Florida Arts Beat, Michael.
Well, it's nice to be here, man.
Wow, what days. Originally from London, you came down from Canada in 1970 to work in Miami and soon discovered great music on the FM dial at 93.9. How did you become involved with the alternative radio taking place on WBUS, The Magic Bus?
I heard the station in the house I was working in, mm-hmm. and probably the first day I heard it, I think the guy said, anyone wants to call in, call up. Mm. And I was taken already by the selections. I called him right up and we had a chat. And that resulted in me being invited down there.
An exciting time for you.
It was very exciting, wow. Man.
Yeah, because you hadn't done radio prior to that.
I just listened to it, mm-hmm. But to be in a station, and then before long, I was subbing on the all-night shows when there was no one to do.
They appreciated your knowledge of music. You were born in London and absorbed so much wonderful music in England, and now you're here in the tropics, Miami and whatnot, and after a while they gave you a full-time job, I understand.
When the station went full-time about a year later, I came back and worked as the music director, which involved sort of being the liaison between the labels and the station, you know. So
now tell me about the staff back then. Your PD was program director.
Many great talents, man. PD, and really the guy who was responsible for keeping me there was Curtis Schwartz.
Who's still in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wonderful guy.
Veteran radio guy.
Yeah.
Great voice.
Your news director?
Jack Lamont. Mm-hmm. Interesting character. Really serious. Always trying to present the news from a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when the conventions were here, I think it was 1972. He was
He took off
working
then.
Night and day, man.
I understand from another co-worker who's written on the internet that Jack booked a room across from the convention center where whoever was staying there of the BUS staff could see the convention center and witness what was taking place, and sent three or four of your co-workers down to the convention center with tape recorders to try to capture both the Democratic and Republican national conventions in Miami Beach. And it was tumultuous. You can certainly query the internet for some wonderful stories. Les Goldberg, your chief engineer, and some of the DJs. Boston Bob Perry had a blues show, and Bob is still here in South Florida, formerly of the Blue Note record store up in North Miami, now selling out of his warehouse up in Broward County. Boston Bob, an all-time friend of yours.
That's right, man. Bobby had a great show on the weekend. He'd play blues and folk. He'd play people like Woody Guthrie and Lead Belly.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd play some of the newer singers from England like John Martin and Nick Drake. And again, it was a one-off show, unlike any of the other ones on the air.
Nothing else like it on the air in the early 70s. What would you play on your show?
Well, I'd play a mix of things, man. I would play things that had just come from England or from Europe, bands that weren't that known here. I had a jazz show on the weekend. I had a jazz and blues show on Sunday nights a bit later. I had a show on Sunday nights that had local poets being accompanied by acoustic musicians, or else I would play some records underneath. That was interesting. And the show that you mentioned, the all-night show you could shake hands with in the dark. I played a lot of different things, jazz, blues, rock.
Where did that title come from? That's an early reference.
I stole that from an album title by the great English poet Pete Brown, who wrote the lyrics for Cream.
Oh, yeah. Grew up to that.
And he had a band of his own. They released about six records.
Which you probably played on WBUS.
I did. I played all those Pete Brown records. Yeah.
Another co-worker of yours, Michael Dean, at WBUS in the early 70s, was a guy by the name of the Cosmic Traveler.
Ron Schaffron. A very colorful character.
Colorful's understating it.
Right.
Tell me about his car, his VW bug.
Ron drove a Volkswagen bug here that painted many different colors.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had manufactured two space rockets. He had one on each front door.
He had little models glued to his car.
Yeah, he had things stuck on the car. All this was years before Art Basel. And yeah. It was quite a... And it didn't take long for various bangs and...
Oh, yeah.
The rockets were falling off, man, and things like that.
May we go back to 1972 again?
This is WBUS in Miami Beach. It's 2 o'clock, and we're listening to Aretha Franklin in church from a yet to be released album.
Now that was You said it was 2 o'clock. It's 2 a.m. And you guys, because of your close connections with the recording industry, would get first chances to air some material that had not been published, that had not been released, like Aretha Franklin's wonderful double gospel album recorded in California. And no doubt you got a chance to interview some of the great music artists in rock and reggae, and you were probably the first guy to interview Bob Marley here in South Florida.
I think there's a good chance that we were the first on BUS to, because of our proximity to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And when he signed the contract with Island Records and Catch a Fire, the first album was released.
Mm-hmm.
They came by the studio on First Street.
How exciting.
Bob was there. He's manager at the time.
Now, Michael Dean will be giving, once again, a talk, a presentation, if you will, this coming Wednesday, June 3rd, for the Listening Club at Audiotech. That's located in Art Center, South Florida, 924 Lincoln Road on Miami Beach. The doors open up at about 7:30. More info at subtropics.org. That will be streamed live on the internet by our own, formerly own, Steve Malagodi, and that will be located at spectacularsystem.com should you not be able to make it down Wednesday night. That's exciting. That's exciting. So you'll be talking about these great years. It was only a few years for you at WBUS before it turned into the Jazz Bus.
That's right. And
another exciting format. We mentioned just very briefly that for more information, as we've run out of time, unfortunately, subtropics.org. And Michael Dean, I want to say thank you so much. Our time is gone, my friend.
Just like that.
Take care.
Ed Bell's South Florida Art Speak, which airs each Friday at 1 p.m., is rebroadcast at 7 p.m. on WLRN Extra HD, now with more power and better coverage in South Florida. Listen on your HD radio at 91.3-2 or live online at WLRN.org.
It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food, and our Broward Arts Calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski. Now, our film critic Dan Hudak speaks with a renowned actor, producer, and writer recently in town to promote his new film, I'll See You in My Dreams.
He's a manly man amongst men, a highly respected character actor who brings gravitas to his performances with the depth of his voice and the gentility of his eyes. It's no surprise that Sam Elliott has been a fixture on the big screen for decades, but even I admit I was surprised that the ladies at the press screening of Elliott's latest film, I'll See You in My Dreams, were cooing every time the 70-year-old actor graced the screen. In the film, which was directed by Brett Haley and is in theaters now, Elliott plays Bill, a retiree who becomes smitten with a widower played by Blythe Danner. While the focus of the story is Danner's Carol, she and Elliot share an easy chemistry that makes their characters' relationship all the more enjoyable. Here's a peek from the film's trailer.
I want to have lunch with you. What's your name?
Yes.
Your name is Yes?
Carol.
I'm Bill. People that retire with all their money, they don't know what to do themselves. I didn't want to end up like that. I don't like being alone.
Is there something you'd like to share with the group?
I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
People can spend their whole lives trying to find that feeling, and at the end, everybody gets it.
'Cause I cried a river over you.
We recently sat down with two-time Golden Globe nominee Sam Elliott inside our WLRN studios in downtown Miami to discuss his career and I'll See You in My Dreams, which is in theaters now. Sam, thank you for joining us on ArtsBeat. It seems like you're showing a bit of a softer side as Bill in I'll See You in My Dreams. Is that why you took the role?
It's a good part of the reason why I took the role. I think maybe the truth of it is as I age, I am getting, in fact, softer, but that's one of the things that appealed to me about this piece, yeah.
But you're known as a manly man type. So you're not worried about your reputation or going soft or anything like that?
Yeah. No. I guess it's you know, I'll take that. I'm happy to be, you know, known as a manly man if that's the case, you know.
I wanted to ask, do you ever do any of the following effeminate things? Because these are things that we can't imagine Sam Elliott ever actually doing. So, for example, have you ever gotten a pedicure?
No.
No. Have you ever enjoyed a musical?
A musical?
Yeah, musical.
Sure.
Musicals, good.
Yeah, I love musicals.
Any particular favorite?
I am musical myself, so I like music. I love music.
A favorite musical to name?
No.
No. Have you ever used the term metrosexual?
I don't know what that means even.
Right. So then,
no, that's not in my vocabulary.
That's the no I was looking for. Have you ever had an alcoholic drink that came with fruit and an umbrella?
I can't. Maybe when I got married. Maybe when Catherine and I were in Hawaii. I might have had a Mai Tai or something that came with. Certainly with a big spear of pineapple, so that qualifies.
Oh, but that we're talking 30 years ago, right? 30 plus years ago?
Yeah.
All right.
Not lately, for sure.
Have you ever worn yoga pants?
No. I'm absolutely sure of that.
Okay. Enough of the silly questions. working with Blythe Danner in the film, obviously she's immensely talented. You have a wonderful chemistry. It seems easy for you guys on screen. Was it always that way, or did you have to work to get there?
I think it was easy from the get-go, and I think the reason for that is because of what both of us have brought to it in being in this business for 50 years. We'd never crossed paths before. I'd never seen her anywhere. We'd never spoke. I'd never talked on the phone. Never met her.
Wow.
I just admired her from afar, like a lot of other people. And, you know, I think she got her actor's equity card 50 years ago. I've been acting for 47 years. So it's one of those strange things about the picture business. You know, everybody, there are a lot of people I probably assume that we all know each other, but not the case. You know, and Blythe is really an East Coast girl, and I'm a West Coast guy. So that's a big part of it, I would suppose.
Anything else about working in the industry all these years that surprises you from then till now? Because your start was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and then you're still working. You're still active.
That's the big surprise. I'm still working, I think. You know, I've seen a lot of changes in the movie business. I got into it in the 60s, and I started out at 20th Century Fox under a contract program as a contract player. Mm-hmm. Saw the whole end of that whole contract player thing come down at Fox and Universal. Those were the last two studios that had that. And now, you know, I've seen a lot of transition and seen television come in and seen the digital age come in. And, you know, it's on some level the same game, but it's vastly different in many respects.
What do you think of movies today in general? And I know it's a terribly broad question, but the way movies are made or the types of movies that are made and popular today as opposed to 20 years ago, 30 years ago, what are your thoughts on those?
Well, I feel like on some level there's room for all of it. It's certainly diverse. You know, I mean, for me personally, I would much rather do these independent films like I'll See You in My Dreams is. I've got another picture coming out in August called Grandma with Lily Tomlin that is another independent film. And they were both two of the best experiences that I've had as an actor over those 47 years. And it's just that it's just a group of people that, you know, they're not, you don't have a bunch of people hanging over your shoulder. You're not beholden to a studio. And it's a group of people that have gotten together. Nobody's really getting paid much money. But you're all in concert and all trying to pull this thing off and get this film made. So it's a real joy on that level. And then and at the same time, there's certainly a marketplace for these big studio pictures that are being made now. I must say I'm a little, you know, not sick of it or amazed. I tend to be a little bit of a cynic, I think, and you know, to see all these sequels continually just getting made one after another in the same kind of mindless entertainment. And maybe that's why they're so successful, because you can go in and just shut it off and you certainly don't have to think about anything when you're watching in something that's primarily computer generated, you know. But I still love the business. That said, I love the game. I have no intention on retiring and want to just keep going. Retirement seems pretty final to me somehow. I don't even like the word.
We're talking with Sam Elliott. The film is I'll See You in My Dreams. It's in theaters now. Is there a role that you've done for all the work you've done that you're most recognized for? People come up to you on the street and say, Strikes and Gutters, Ups and Downs, or Big Lebowski,
There's a few. There's a few. And the reason I think that they're there, or if I'm known for anything in particular, is because of, you know, the fact that they rerun a lot of them, you know, whether it's on the Western Channel or what it might be, you know. But Tombstone and The Big Lebowski, as you mentioned, and MASH, Roadhouse, not MASH, Mask. You can tell I've been doing this for a while. And Roadhouse, those are the obvious ones, you know, those are the ones that people most, you know, often comment on.
Roadhouse was good stuff.
Mindless entertainment, boy, talk about it. It looks like the ultimate male fantasy movie. Yeah. But I've had a number of women tell me that was their favorite film as well, so.
Well, you know, Patrick Swayze.
He was a man.
Yeah, late 80s. Yeah, he was a long way.
He was quite a guy, Patrick.
So, Lebowski, do you get a lot of attention for The Big Lebowski? Invited to conferences, conventions?
Yeah, I tell you, it's an amazing thing, that whole thing, you know, I mean, I've never gone to one of those, but I've heard stories about them, and I've been invited to it too, but man, I'd be afraid to go to one of those things to really show up.
But I've always thought you were essential in that film, because your voice grounds it.
Well, he's the storyteller. He's the guy telling the tale.
But you ground it in a certain kind of depth and reality, because so much of it is just surreal and crazy.
Yeah.
But you're there to kind of level things out.
Yeah.
In the very beginning, your voice, and then you appear in the end.
Yeah.
I think it was very choice casting from the Coen brothers.
Thank you. I was very fortunate to get that. I was on location doing a picture with John Milius when I got that script. And I was actually very excited to read it, because I knew it was a Coen brothers script. And I thought, wow. I'm going to get a chance to play one of those wacky Coen brothers characters and get rid of the cowboy image, right? As I was, I've gone through periods of my lifetime where I felt like I was kind of boxed in terms of people's perception of what I could do and couldn't do. And I kind of bridled or bristled at that whole cowboy thing for a time. And here I get this script. I go back to the room and I start reading this script. And right off the top in the description of this voiceover, it's like this Southwest accent, and the song "Tumbling Tumbleweeds" is playing. And here's this voice sounding not unlike Sam Elliott. And I'm like, wow, it was pretty cool that they put my name in their script, I thought, and they even spelled my name right too. So it was good. And it was the same when I showed up, when the guy shows up, when the stranger shows up in the bowling alley and sits down next to Jeff. Here the guy comes, and he's got a cowboy hat on, and he's dressed like a cowboy, and looks not unlike Sam Elliott. So, pretty cool working with those guys. They're brilliant filmmakers and a lot of fun.
Do you miss playing a cowboy now, ever?
Yeah, I'm not done with that. I'm going to do more of it. I love that genre, and it's been really good to me. I've since gotten over that being sensitive about being boxed in. I've now come to grips with it. Not only that, but I realized that if it wasn't for that, I probably wouldn't have had a career. Because it was like the Coen brothers is because of the Western image about me, and the same about a movie called The Golden Compass. You know, I mean, other things have come to me because of, you know, for better or for worse, being kind of that iconic kind of Western kind of character, you know. And I think on some level, the thing that helped me get over it too was that, at least, you know, it's not like I was afflicted with something and I had to get over it, but it dawned on me that these bikers and these soldiers that I've played in my life as well, they're all of that kind of Western ilk. They're all kind of the same kind of guy, you know. Yeah. That kind of solitary man that's capable and so forth.
Please stay with us here on South Florida Arts Beat, the conversation between film critic Dan Hudak and esteemed actor, producer, and writer Sam Elliott continues in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now we return to the conversation with our film critic Dan Hudak and his esteemed guest.
Talking with Sam Elliott, the star of I'll See You in My Dreams in theaters now. What advice do you give to a young actor with all your years of experience, young actor coming up in the game? How do you sustain success?
I think good fortune is the thing that, I mean, I would be honest with you, I wouldn't advise anybody to get in this game and do it lightly. I would forewarn them that it's a rocky road. There's more rejection in this world than anything I know, and that's the hardest part to deal with, because you lose so much more than you get. You know, it's just part of the game. But if you're passionate, if you're passionate about it, that's the number one thing. You've got to be passionate. You know, we got to follow our dreams and follow our passions, I think. But you really do have to be passionate about it and be a little thick-skinned.
Any particular rejection you've suffered that you care to share with us on a role you would have been perfect for?
That I never got over? No, there isn't any.
I guess you just got to move on,
I think,
right?
Looking back, I can't even think about it. I mean, certainly there's disappointments along the way, stuff you didn't get, but. You know, my disappointments, I think, are more related to things that I did do that I felt like I fell short on, or things that I did that didn't continue on, like The Golden Compass. I mentioned The Golden Compass. It was a trilogy of incredible books.
Yeah, I agree.
Philip Pullman, exceptional books. And we did the first one, and that character that I was playing really blossomed in the second book, and I was dying to do that second book. But the movie didn't make money, and oddly enough, I think it was, I don't know why, but, I've often credited Philip Pullman for kind of knocking that thing off its tracks when he got up in front of the International Press Corps in New York the first time and told them all that he was an atheist. It was like the Catholic Church came knocking at the door very quickly, man, and they just laid waste to the picture.
Also, one last thing on the roles you've done in TV, playing Ron Dunn, the Ron Swanson counterpart in Eagleton and Parks and Recreation, as the polar opposite, but kind of very similar at the same time.
Yeah.
Just an absolute delight.
What a joy. What a joy that was. And a great opportunity that came along. Last year proved to be the most interesting year for me, I think, because diverse material came my way. I got a chance to do some funny stuff, you know, and I got a chance to just do things that I'd never done before.
Like fall in love on screen.
Yep.
Not that you'd never done that, but...
Yep. Well, yeah. It's a different kind of thing, though, and this was really such a well-crafted piece, and working with Blythe was just pretty incredible. But working with Nick Offerman and that whole bunch there at Parks and Rec, it was truly a gift. And I did this other thing, too, for the FX channel called Justified that was equally just a wonderful journey. I mean, when you get an opportunity to work with smart people that generate great material, it just doesn't get any better than that.
And also in the last year, I read that you were inducted into the International Mustache Hall of Fame. Which seems like that.
Which, what the hell does that mean?
There's
right?
An International Mustache Hall of Fame, yeah. But nonetheless, a cool honor.
Yeah, I don't know what this thing about my mustache is. A lot of people talk about my mustache. It's very bizarre. I had a request from Esquire magazine recently to do an article based upon my mustache, and I thought, really? I mean, I've never. I don't know. It's just bizarre.
It's the mustache and the voice. It makes me want to get a whiskey and steak and smoke a cigar with you.
Well, so, let's go do that.
Darn right, Ed. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all good. I'm happy, but I'm also happy mustacheless. You know, I shaved it off for this thing that I did on FX, and I was happy I did. It's just hair, as I always say.
Sam, thank you very much for the time. Truly a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Dan. Nice to be with you.
There's a mustache hole. I was like, what the hell is that?
Can you imagine?
Sam Elliott has starred in 40 feature films and has worked in television throughout his career. His latest film, I'll See You in My Dreams, is in theaters now. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Let's go bowl. Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at punchdrunkmovies.com. Well, I just can't let this opportunity go by without including the final scene of the Coen Brothers' cult classic, The Big Lebowski. Here's Jeff Bridges and Sam Elliott.
And now when you're sitting there in your silk upholstered chair, talking to some rich folks that you know, well, I hope you don't see me in my ragged company. All that you know, I could never be alone.
Two old sodas, Gary.
Right. Good luck tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Oh, sorry to hear about Donnie.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you eat the bar and sometimes, you know. Hey, man.
How do you do, dude?
I wondered if I'd see you again.
I wouldn't miss the semis. How things been going?
Oh, you know, strikes and gutters, ups and downs.
Sure, I've got you.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary. Well, take care, man. Gotta get back.
Sure. Take it easy, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you will.
Yeah, well, the dude abides.
The dude abides. I don't know about you, but I take comfort in that. It's good knowing he's out there, the dude, taking her easy for all us sinners. Shush. I sure hope he makes the finals. Well, that about does her. Wraps her all up. Things seem to have worked out pretty good for the dude and Walter. And it was a pretty good story, don't you think? Made me laugh to beat the band. Parts, anyway. I didn't like seeing Donnie go. But then I happen to know that there's a little Lebowski on the way. I guess that's the way the whole darned human comedy keeps perpetuating itself. down through the generations, westward to wagons, across the sands of time until we... Oh, look at me. I'm rambling again. Well, I hope you folks enjoyed yourselves. Catch you later on down the trail. Say, friend, get any more of that good sarsaparilla?
Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. To South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is diners. The man in the expensive shirt with his designer tie flipped over his shoulder across the counter spoke loudly to the hard-working waitress in the wig. I come here because nothing is supposed to change in this place. The daily specials holding hopes of one man's Groundhog's Day aspirations included stuffed cabbage, London broil with two sides, shrimp creole on rice with two sides, and a Three Sisters salad featuring tuna, crab, and egg. The American Diner is where I began my working life in kitchens. It was not my first job, but it was my first cook's job. It was a world unto itself, a world that conned me first with the smell of food. It is hunger that makes you crazy, whether it's one appetite or another. When you begin to work a kitchen's hotline, you have to get into the craziness or it beats you down. It's a brutal contest that takes place in a dangerous atmosphere. There is a whole language that must be learned. The men and women who commit to playing this game will not tolerate much in the way of mistakes. If you make the wrong plate on a party of four and have to start over, you have to face the wrath of the owner, your fellow line cooks, and perhaps, worst of all, the waitresses. The owner wants to turn the tables, the cooks want to turn the tickets, and the waitresses want to turn the guests, because that's where the money comes in. From the first set of cracked eggs at 6 o'clock in the morning to the last hamburger at midnight. There were rhythms that became intelligible. But in my first week, it seemed like there was only one speed, and it was breakneck. There was no training manual, and there was no cooking school. I just had to get in there and try to help out those who were more experienced than me. I would be grateful when anyone asked me to do a job that I could actually do. The fact that I got all the crappy jobs was not lost on me, but it sure beat being useless. I hated the factories and the concrete and the hot tar roofing jobs that came before the diner so badly that this one had to be the one. The work was hot and greasy, and I was getting burned and cut every day, and my nerves were assaulted by the waitress's constant demands, ordering, ordering, ordering. But each day, I was getting better while fighting off many insane impulses. There were times I had to stop myself from just reaching down with my hands into a deep fryer's gurgling incendiary fat to get the fries for the countless burgers. I learned never to clutch anything metal without wrapping a doubled-up rag around it first. I learned which waitresses were fair and which were really pushy broads that even the other gals couldn't stand. I learned how to cadence the pace of my work. I learned how to flip 2 egg pans at once and do a million other short order miracles that saved my ass from going down in flames. I became a short order cook in an American diner, pretty much like the one we were sitting at near Miami's construction cranes aplenty, and I found myself agreeing with the man in the nice shirt. I hope this place doesn't change. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
I don't want fish cakes and rye bread. You heard what I said. Waiter, please. I want my mind fried. I want the frim-fram sauce with the os and fay with Chef Baba on the side.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Opa-locka Food Truck. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat Entertainment Calendar. And today we welcome back Ms. Jody Horn-Leschinski, Assistant Director of the Broward Cultural Division. How's life these days, Jody? You're back in town.
I am back in town, and I'm so glad to be here because it's still Broward County's 100th birthday, and we are celebrating all year long.
Exciting!
And to celebrate, Jackson's Ice Cream Parlor and Broward 100 are inviting residents to enter a Facebook contest to create a new Broward 100 ice cream flavor. What ingredients do you want in your ice cream? The deadline to enter this contest is midnight on Friday, June 5th. Go to the Broward 100 Facebook page to enter. You could win a Jackson's original kitchen sink ice cream dessert that serves four. The winning flavor will be featured at Jackson's and during Duende, the final weekend. The grand finale weekend of the Broward 100th Centennial Celebration, October 2nd through 4th. While we're talking about Broward 100, I want to let you know that Broadway director and Cirque Dreams founder Neil Goldberg and Broward 100 announced the greatest Broadway-style Broward spectacle ever. We, the passion and rhythm of the people. We is a one-of-a-kind Broward County production and is part of the weekend-long finale Duende. We will be performed on Friday, October 2nd and Saturday, October 3rd at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. We is a show illuminating Broward County's culture, talent, and diversity with awe-inspiring performances, spectacular theatrics, and stunning visuals. Renowned celebrity artists will be joined on stage by a cast of over 100 brilliantly talented South Florida musicians, dancers, poets, choirs, athletes, and creative variety acts celebrating the community we call home. So if you're an NPR listener, and I know you are,
oh, yeah,
you probably know Arts Desk reporter Netta Ulaby. Please join us on June 24th at 7 p.m. at ArtServe to hear Netta speak on arts journalism in a fractured cultureverse. Ulibi's talk will be the keynote address for the closing forum for the art exhibition Retrospective celebrating 7 years of DBA. The gallery reception will begin at 6 p.m. and the talk at 7 p.m. This is a free event, but seating is limited, so please RSVP online at the Broward Cultural Division's website. So there's a lot of sanctioned events taking place for Broward 100. Pompano Beach Amphitheater brings Morris Day and the Time tonight from 8 to 11 p.m. And on Saturday, the AMP brings you the free summer festival with a wide range of music from Latin and funk to hip-hop and reggae starting at 1 p.m. with free admission for everybody. The Florida Classical Ballet presents two ballet programs featuring principal dancers from the San Francisco Ballet, Joffrey Ballet, Orlando Ballet, and Washington Ballet this Friday at 8 p.m. and next Friday, June 7th at 5 p.m. at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. Join Glavovic Studio this Saturday during the Flagler Village Art Walk from 7 to 11 p.m. for an exhibition of Vanguard, drawings of their proposed renovations of the Vanguard Theater, a 99-seat black box performance space which was formerly a church when it was first built in 1937 and now is home to the experimental and award-winning Thinking Cap Theater. The Fort Lauderdale Gay Men's Chorus presents Music of the Night on Saturday at 8 p.m. at the NSU Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale. Enjoy some of their favorite musical selections inspired by Music of the Night, not only by Phantom, but anything having to do with night or brave medieval knights. Dial M for Murder is a thrilling and suspenseful melodrama performed by the Curtain Call Playhouse this Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Sunrise Civic Center Theater. Now, we still have other events that are not sanctioned, but we still mention them anyway because we want everybody to have something to do. The Museum of Discovery and Science invites the whole family to participate in the annual evening event, Turtle Walks, which occur Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from June through July, beginning at 9 p.m. Also at the museum now through September is Sesame Street Presents the Body, which is an interactive exhibition all about you. The fifth annual Deerfield Beach Wine and Food Festival takes place on Saturday from 1 to 9 p.m. at Quiet Waters Park in Deerfield Beach. Enjoy a wide range of noshing opportunities from a lineup of South Florida restaurateurs, private caterers, and your favorite food trucks. The ACT Theater of Davie presents The Runner Stumbles at the Davie Pine Island Multipurpose Center Friday and Saturday at 8 and Saturday and Sunday at 2, both this weekend and next weekend. The City of Pembroke Pines Glass Gallery presents the exhibit 12 Voices Speaking for Art, now through July 6th. The exhibit is a close-knit group of 12 professional women and artists who are connected through their love of art, and their creations range from realism and modern to abstract, from acrylic and watercolors to mixed media and collage. If you would like more detailed cultural event information, please visit artscalendar.com, Broward County's complete guide to the arts. Never miss a thing. Get there.
Jody Horn-Lashinsky is the Assistant Director of the Broward Cultural Division, and thanks for all of those events, Jody. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Ed, and to you and your listeners as well.
And we'd like to mention once again our guest earlier on the show, Michael Dean, owner of Yardbird Records and Books and former broadcaster on WBUS and WDNA, will be giving a presentation at the Listening Club this coming Wednesday, June 3rd, and that's located in the Arts Center, South Florida, 924 Lincoln Road on Miami Beach. It starts about 7 o'clock, and for more information, go to subtropics.org. It will be about WBUS, the Magic Bus, the alternative radio station on Miami Beach in the early 70s. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Andy Wagner, our technical director. We'd like to thank our contributors today as well, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Jody Horn-Lashinsky. Please call us with your comments at 305-995-2258. Fax us your event info to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. That's Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.